I'm James Brierton. This is Charlotte, North Carolina, and you're listening to the Carolina Weather Group, a podcast each week featuring weather, science, technology, and more across the Carolinas and beyond. So glad you're with us this week, whether you're watching or listening. We welcome you in. Well, at the end of last year, we got together with our weather pals from Weather Brain, Stormfront Freaks, Chaser Chat, other big weather podcasts. We had the privilege of raising over $7,000 to the American Red Cross during our Weather Pods Disaster Relief Telethon. And in the final hour of that telethon, as we were counting down the minutes that were left in that 12-hour-long marathon, we had one of the most memorable conversations I will remember for a long time. Jeff Petrowski, Storm Chaser, and his friend Eric Fox joined us for that final minutes of the telethon trying to raise money. And, you know, they told a story that if I were to tell the story, or maybe if you were to tell the story, it would be probably just full of fear and a recollection of how scared we were as we were getting too close to a tornado, intimately close to a tornado. But if you know anything about these guys, or as you're about to find out, their sense of humor is just magnificent. So here is a story that is scary, should be scary, and yet they found a way to make us all chuckle, to make us all laugh, to really bring us in to a part of the story while at the same time walking away with a sense of relief, accomplishment, and just flat out awe. Here it is.
We're closing this baby out. And so we've got James Brierton from the Carolina Weather Group. Jared Smith is on. Scotty Powell's on as well from CWG. We got Gabriel Harbor from Chaser Chats back to close us up. Bill Murray from Weather Brains is here. And of course, Carly Sisson, who's been a big help with us, not only all day, but planning this thing as well. And a big shout out to Brad Panovich, who just finished the last hour. But folks, I'm telling you what, we're closing this out. We are driving to $7,000. We're only a few hundred dollars away already from that goal. So it's so important, as Brad mentioned last hour, if you've been kind of waiting, maybe you've been watching us, throwing us a little bit on in the back, keeping an eye on things, but you haven't pulled the trigger to help. Whether that's as little as $5 or $500, it obviously depends on what you're able to do. But to this Thanksgiving season, make a difference and make an impact to the Red Cross and say that from the weather community, you know, by donating whatever you can. That's the key. You can see the QR code in the upper left-hand corner of our broadcast, or you can go to bit.ly/WXPods. Telethon. Either one of those, you're going to hit our Red Cross page and have an opportunity to donate. And we're going to be keeping an eye on this last hour as we drive to 7,000 and beyond. And I know Carly's going to interrupt us if needed as those donations come in. But I want to introduce one of the guests that we're bringing in tonight, Storm Chaser Jeff Petrowski. Jeff, welcome to the show. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks, Phil. This is a great cause, and I'm glad to join everybody in this last final hour, man. Let's make it happen, right?
Yeah, this is it.
And 7,000. Let's make it happen. I'm thinking 8 or 9. I want to push it. Let's just go all the way. Let's push it on up, right?
I think we can. We keep increasing our goal as we go because this weather community has been outstanding. But here's how we're going to roll here. I have a question to ask you, and then I'm backing up and letting all our great podcast collaborators jump in. But I want to mention the National Storm Chaser Summit, because the last couple of years, one year you talked about electric vehicles and the use of those in chasing with an electric vehicle. And this past year, you talked about Starlink and how that can be used in chasing as well. What's the next big thing?
Well, I mean, both those things are still really important, right? So the Cybertruck's about to roll out here on the November 30th on unveiling. So down in Austin. So we'll find out all the final details of the, you know, final configuration, the 300, 400, 500 mile vehicle, the pricing, timeline when that's going to be start rolling out as we get into end of November, December. We've got 1.5 million, almost 2 million people on Cybertruck waiting for that thing to, you know, come on out. And I've got my order in first night, and I'm waiting to see when it's going to roll out. So that's important. Second thing is Starlink just this week unveiled a brand new dish. It's about 12 inches wide, about 24 inches long. And instead of having the pole on it motorized, this one you can kind of aim it where you need to. So it's great for if you're out in the car, you need a temporary setup or emergency communications like the Red Cross, right? In the disaster scenes. We've seen so many times over the years in the hurricanes and the flooding that a lot of times utilities and the cell service goes out, but you got to have a way to communicate, right? And actually just right before the conference last year and after the conference, I actually used Starlink on 3 or 4 of the tornado events this year where I was able to get communications out where the cell service was not existent in those damages, right? So it's really important to have that instant communication to help people is also how bad the situation is. So yeah, I'm a big believer in EVs. I'm a big believer in Starlink, and those things are continuing to accelerate globally.
First of all, I just want to say I love Jeff's energy because as somebody who's been sitting here since 10 a.m. this morning, I need this. I'm going to drive off of this here.
Yeah, I got you.
Thank you. Talking about tech. Yeah, I agree. I think the satellite internet, making that affordable for people is going to help emergency responders, storm chasers, broadcast meteorologists. It's going to kind of help a lot of people. And of course, rural communities who maybe aren't connected to the infrastructure right now.
Exactly. I mean, I've seen broadcasts from Antarctica this summer. They've now got it for airlines. So you can be on airlines. You got it for boats and most of the islands in the Caribbean, as well as globally around the world now in South America, North America, Canada, Alaska. You've got virtually almost global coverage now worldwide. So you can take a dish. Think about this. We can take a dish, got Starlink sitting over in the corner right there, and take a Starlink and put it almost in a briefcase or in a suitcase, right? Roll on bag on a plane and go anywhere in the world and be live anywhere in the world. It doesn't matter. And then by the way, they just launched the V2 satellites the last 6 months, in which another Starlink was launched this morning, last night at midnight out of Florida. In the coming 6-12 months, you're going to have Starlink on your cell phone. You'll be able to text and communicate, talk, and then about 6-12 months anywhere in the world. So there's no more dead spots. I want you to think about that. Anywhere in the world, you take your phone and you can talk on Starlink for emergency communications, right? That's another massive game changer. So those kind of things are just the whole industry tech-wise is rapidly moving forward. And you got to really be prepared because it's a whole new door for everybody right there, you know, in communications and weather, you know, weather messages on a global scale. It's a new world.
Bill Murray, you strike me as a guy who likes technology. We've been getting to know each other better this week over there from the Weather Brains HQ. What do you think you could do with all of that Starlink technology?
Well, that's just what Jeff's talking about is just a total game changer. Jeff, I remember a game changing piece of technology in 2003 at the National Storm Chaser Convention. I won the XM delivered, Baron radar. Yep. And you talk about a game changer because, I mean, we were spending our time chasing down, you know, days ends with stray internet, you know, pull up in the parking lot, you know, and taking down on some internet when the manager would look out and all of a sudden you'd go dark.
Local library, right? Yeah. So you got the XM on the burn side, even, you know, aviation, mobile, marine. XM was a massive breakthrough and it still is, right? Because when everything else fails, you can count on getting that data. And a lot of times it's critical to have that piece of information when you're in the middle of Montana or Western South Dakota and then you're in the middle of nowhere, having that data, man, whether it's winds or the frontal position or is a storm severe, is a tornadic, and having that, I'm telling you, you know, in all events, just like, for example, Joplin comes to mind, any of these historic events, weather disasters, a lot of times is having that crucial piece of data, just 5 minutes of data and right before something's about ready to happen, and it changes the whole picture on how you respond and what's going to happen. You know, where do I need to be? What's going to happen in this next community? And it's critical. Yeah, having that critical data at the right time when you have communications, it's really, really important. But yeah, the Baron side of the house, yes, that's been a massive game changer on the XM side for sure.
And well, it was interesting listening to Brett Adair talk in the 5 o'clock, I think 4 o'clock hour, because he had a close call in Hurricane Michael.
Yep.
And, you know, he's really, you know, getting into, you know, putting instrumentation cameras in front of landfalling systems. Of course, Mark Suddeth has been doing that so successfully. And you know, he always recovers and, you know, the vehicles and gets these, you know, fabulous videos like the The video from Michael to me is one of the most shocking things I ever saw, because I got to see what a Cat 5 hurricane looked like. And it looked like what I had read about in the Labor Day hurricane in 1935. You see why people die in these things. And, you know, to do anything that shows that to, you know, our population, you know, in Florida, that, you know, a lot of our elderly folks lost their lives in Ian, you know, when maybe if they had, you know, experienced something like that virtually ahead of time, they may not have stayed. You know, so I think anytime we can show somebody what something's going to be like, it's, you know, really, really critical. So I think this is going to open it up, you know, for all these, you know, really extreme chasers like, you know, Josh Morgerman and, you know, all these guys that go all over the world. You know, they're coming to us from the Philippines and all these places that, you know, the connectivity is not very good. And suddenly they're going to have excellent connectivity. It's going to open up a lot and just make it safer, too.
Oh, you know, absolutely. The other thing is, let's be honest, is in the weather community enterprise here in North America, right? We're so blessed between having NOAA and private vendors and access to massive amounts of data, right? A lot of times it's data overloads, we all know. But if you go outside the U.S., guys, it's very slim pickings, right? So, yeah, having that extra data and having extra communications, it also helps the emergency managers and people in disaster recovery. I want to go into details why and how it happened, but I've had even military contact me in those situations when you have a critical situation happen, and they'll say, how bad is it? Can we get a plane on at the airport? Can we land a plane? There's debris off the runways yet. You know, just that little piece of information, you get the aid coming in quickly, right? If they know somebody's at the airport or clearing debris because there's no phone communication. So anything like that helps bring in resources in, it's just, again, the Red Cross, right? How fast can we respond to that location? How bad is it? And I'm always been a big believer, even since the cell phone, the first days of cell phone, right, technology, that if you can show the people the image from the area that just been hit, or this is a tornado approaching your location, there's something like over 10 times, social scientists tells us, over 10 times more likely to respond to the threat. You telling me there's a tornado warning in my county, I may or may not pay attention to it, quite frankly, honestly, but you show it to me and I'm live, it's a game changer. Like you're calling your parents, you're calling your kids, you say, go to shelter now, it's in your location. It's a total different reaction, right? So seeing the pictures from the field, it's an immediate response, right? And that's what I've always proud of myself in sharing that information with people for 40 plus years, right? That's the game. That's the thing. That's the message, really. That's what we appreciate.
Hey, go Jeff, ahead, Gabriel here. Got a question for you.
Yes.
So you mentioned it is far more likely that people will take action if they actually see a visual of an approaching storm.
Yep.
How do you, as a storm chaser who obviously does this professionally, reconcile that with the fact that you're also trying to make money off of your footage? Because I know there's a lot of conversation in the storm chasing community about, yes, we would like to be able to use our footage to warn people, but there's not a lot of time if we're trying to get that footage out in a quick fashion to actually negotiate, make sure we get paid for it. And if we just give it away for free, and then they plaster it all over the newscast, they plaster it all over their social media, their website, there's no guarantee that we're going to actually be able to make any money off of that. So how do you deal with a situation like that?
Well, I in the early days in storm chasing, back 20, 30 years ago, I did a lot of that, right, on the TV side of the house. Today, most of my stuff I shoot, I do it for archives and for historic and kind of like a documentary production. So it's not spur of the moment. I've got to do all this other stuff because it takes away, my experience has been, it takes you away from focusing on the storm and the damage and the continue the chase, right? And there's times where it's so bad, you have to stop chasing, right? And you got to start helping people, right? So every chase is a little bit different, but I don't so much worry about the now or the sale right now. The more important thing is document it correctly, do a really good job with that, and everything else will take care of itself. Right. So if you just do a good job and document it well, people want the video. They may not buy it from you today, maybe 2 years, 5 years, 20 years, 30 years later, they'll want it, but it does come. You just do a good job and document the situation and they will come. That's how business is.
What, Jeff, what was your season like, 2023? How was the chase season?
Incredible, for you? Incredible, full throttle. I filmed Parenting. I was in Parenting when the city basically got leveled, and the Texas Panhandle is a huge day. As you got into May, Colorado, Western Kansas, Eastern, Southeastern Wyoming, Western, Central, and Eastern Nebraska, Western Nebraska, there in May, June, and July was just outrageous. I filmed about 35 tornadoes this year. It was a gangbuster year. I mean, just kept rocking early in the spring down in West Texas. So the funniest one, if you got 30 seconds, I'll share a quick story here. We got an hour, I guess, so I can take up some of the time.
Go.
Okay, here we go. So I'm down on the border. I'm down at Midland. See a tornado southeast of Midland. Very photogenic, out in the country, nothing happens. It moves southeast, and it goes way southeast, and now I'm like just north of the U.S.-Mexican border, right? And there's this big supercell, and I got Border Patrol down there, just in the U.S., about 20 miles north of the border, and they're doing their kind of road checks or watching things, right, like they're supposed to do. And I pull inside of them, and there's this big wall called west of them, rotating just west of their checkpoint. And I told him, I said, hey, just keep watching. It's going to tornado. And one spoke English, one did not. And I said, don't move. Just keep watching. I went down the road. And about 3 minutes later, we had a big fat cone on the tornado. And it lasted for the next 30, 40 minutes. And it moved south past their position, past mine. I come back south. And they're holding up their phones that they got the video of it as I passed them. And they were talking really, you think I talk fast? They were really talking fast. And because they were so excited about this tornado. And I actually watched it go all the way to the border. They moved southeast down toward just northwest of Del Rio. And the storm, the supercell, the tornado died just before it crossed the border into Mexico, just northwest of Del Rio. That was an incredible day, right? That's online. So things like that, experience the Border Patrol, chase a tornado from the U.S. back to Mexico. I mean, how often does that happen? Come on, that just, you know, with the politics today, you know, coming north, this one was going southeast. I mean, you just can't make this stuff up, but it happened, right? And be able to see it, be out there and witness that, it's just one of those things that's just phenomenal, right? It's just crazy. But that's that short little story that happened on that day. So that's just one of my adventures this year. We documented everything. You know, it was just amazing chase, right? A lot of great chases this year.
Who else has a question for Jeff?
Jeff, I got to ask you, what's your favorite spot to chase? If you could choose one spot in the United States, what would that be?
Gosh, sir. You know, Scott, I've thought about that a million times, and I've been asked, and me and Kathy just had a discussion in the last couple of weeks. Hey, Dave, am I going to retire here in 4 or 5 years? Where do we want to live? Do we want to live in Texas? Do we want to live in Western Oklahoma? Do I want to live, you know, there's so many beautiful places. I mean, you cannot go wrong with Southeast Montana. I mean, Western South Dakota, it's just wide open, and it's very amazing. Colorado is incredible. Let's be honest. I'd be high plains. I mean, guys, you see, if it's tornado and if it's not an HP day, you can see stuff 30, 40, 50 miles away. You're seeing tornadoes, you know, that great distance. New Mexico, incredible. Oklahoma, Texas Panhandle, incredible. I love the upslope in the Texas Panhandle. It was gamebusters this year. Up. I love upslope events. A lot of times the Texas Panhandle makes its own rules. I love the days when there's not any risk and, you know, there's a boundary out there. There's a little wave coming by and it explodes and goes crazy, right? There wasn't even a risk. Those are my favorite days, right? So, yeah, I love the Texas Panhandle. There's not a favorite. It's like, where can I get a decent hotel after a long chase and a hot meal if you can find one at midnight, right? We've all been on the roads. And where can I see something really pretty and have a good road network to get you there? Central Nebraska is a little bit tougher up in Cherry County. Valentine roads are 50 miles apart. You get out by Enid or Woodward. They're like every a mile or 2 or 3 miles or 5 miles. I've got a good paved road I can stay on. So yeah, I like the paved roads and you know, where you have a grid every mile or two. Those are the easier type chases, right? And it's safer that way, honestly. Let's be honest. Yep.
So Jeff, I'd love the story you tell about you and Brian Sturz, Edgar, Nebraska.
Yeah.
Go through that story. I don't know how much time we have, but, with your high level energy, tell us that story.
That's an all time classic. So I, back in that, when the Edgar, Nebraska happened, I had just recently, like a couple weeks before this event, I'd had my, van, I had a car, like a, conversion van. I had their usual. So I'm always big on maintenance, new tires, belts, hoses, you know, the drill before the spring. And this was a triple point day, kind of west north of flow, triple point just west of Grand Island there at Edgar. And about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, we get up there. Brian, pick up Brian. We're chasing. I'm going down this country road, 40 miles an hour. The storm's only like 25 miles west. I mean, big Barbara pole. It's moving east southeast. Had a tornado warning on it earlier, producing some baseball sized hail. And all of a sudden, we're going up a little bit of incline, and we're in the middle of nowhere. There's this corn as high as, you know, it's like 8 feet high on both sides of the road. We're in the middle of nowhere. I hear clang bang, and all of a sudden, I'm giving it gas in the car. The van's slowing down. I'm like, "Oh, bro," I said, "we got a problem." he looks at me. He goes, "What's wrong?" And I said, "I think the drive shaft just fell off the transmission." I said, "You can hear it underneath, like banging and banging, and parts were falling out of the car." I said, "It's not like the U-joint just fell, you know, broke." And Brian goes, and I go, "Well, I think the bigger question is, there's like a half mile tornado on the ground to my northwest. We got to figure out, are we going to start running? What are we going to do?" At that exact second, when I stopped on the side of the road, right, just pulled over the side of the road, my phone rings, and I'll reenact the deal for you. Never done this before. "Hello, hun. Babe, what's going on?" "Hey, I got something real serious to tell you. Well, car just broke down. There's a half mile wide tornado about a mile and a half by northwest. It's coming at us. I don't know if we're going to make it or not." I hear on the other side, "Jeff, quit kidding me. What are you guys doing? Do you see anything yet?" That was the call. I said, "I am not kidding. I got to go. We're running for our lives." And I hang up the phone. So anyway, my next call was 911 and to the county fire dispatcher. What's funny is, there are several 911 offices where 911 dispatch, especially in some of these rural areas, they may be there for 20, 30 years, a long time at those offices. So sometimes, even if I don't talk to them for 5 years, they may recognize your voice from a previous call from 5 years ago on the last disaster, right? So when I call them, the county guy goes, 911 operator, he goes, "What's your emergency?" I go, "Tornado's on the ground. Tell Grand Island Weather Service near Hastings that there's a tornado on the ground. It's about to hit Edgar, and here's where we're at, and it's a half mile wide. Can, you know, get a tornado warning out." I said, "Okay." And I said, "We're going to try to run to this house. It's to my northwest." He goes, I said, "If I don't make it, this is my name. Here's my number. This is my wife's number." And that's what I told 911, because I didn't think we were going to make it. It was coming at us. And the client goes, "Jeff, there's a farmhouse over about a half a mile." He goes, "I think we can make it." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh." And so we get out. We start running up the hill on that pavement. Then we have to peel north and go on the ground, kind of their gravel road up to that farm. And it's uphill. And while we're running, the winds are about 70, 80 out of the east, east-southeast, going into the tornado, back to my northwest, with baseball hail falling. We hear it going by, you know, over our heads. And I think me and Brian may have broke the all-time fastest half-mile run in history, that event, because I was hoofing it. I mean, Brian was carrying the camera, and I remember passing Brian about halfway up the drive. I'm like, uh-oh, you can hear the roar coming. I mean, when you hear the roar coming, you're in the suck zone. It was pretty bad. So we get to the front porch. I saw the lights on at the house, and I knock on the middle, the storm door outside, and the lady opens the door, and she goes, "What do you need?" I said, "There's a tornado coming. Do you have a basement?" She goes, "Why do you ask?" I said, "Because there's a tornado in your cornfield." Literally, now it's closing in about 100 yards, and I could hear, you hear the roar, and things are getting louder, and her front porch has these railing. You know, farms have those little rails, you know, little decorative rails on the front porch that hold the front porch up. Well, those are whistling like in a winds are about 90 gusts of 100 now on the front porch. They're screaming like a hurricane door going. But the wind is going through that metal right on the front porch, and they're screaming. And I'm like, and then she hears that, right? She's hard to hear. She hears that noise. She goes, "What's that?" And I said, "The tornado's about to get us both. We got to go now." She unlocks the door, and she has a flashlight because power's out. She unlocks the door, throws the door open. Me and Brian rush in, and Brian trips on the front seal of the farmhouse. They got a little 2-inch riser. He face plants with that and the camera. The camera still rose. You hear the audio. And about that time, the boards are are blown into the west side of the house. You hear, boom, 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 boom. The boards are impelling the house. The roof is coming off the house. And all I see is I see her take off the kitchen that way, and I'm like, I just start following, and I got Brian up, I grabbed Brian, we ran to the back by the kitchen. There's a staircase out of the kitchen down in the basement. I see her dive under the pool table in the basement. I just see her dive, and because I built houses in Tulsa for 20 plus years, and most basements with cellars, you have to, there's a staircase, right? And you can get underneath the stairs, right? The stairs are like this. And I got Brian, there's a washer dryer. I got my back, and Brian, we were both hiding on the stairs, and the stairs were doing this on our back. I could feel the stairs trying to come out of the basement, and the dust, the rafters, everything above us is gone. I mean, the house is like, boom, it's gone, right? And there's dust, just like the movie, there's dust settling down, and we're choking. You can't breathe. My ears are popping. And it's like, you can't just sucking everything out, right? You couldn't breathe for like 2 minutes. Dead silence. The tornado passes. It's dead silence. But occasionally I still hear a board fall, like boom, boom. And then I remember getting the lady, she comes and calls, that's nothing funny about this. It's just crazy what happened. The lady crawls out from underneath the pool table and said, let's go upstairs real slowly and we'll look. So we all three climb up the stairs like a movie. This is crazy. We climb up the stairs real slow, once at a time, and there's a door and it's still closed. I didn't know what we're going to find. And I unlock the door, something gets in, I push the door, then the door opens like about a foot and a half. And just as I look up, the roof of everything's gone. The north wall is still half there, just outside the door here. The back north wall is still there. Everything else is gone. And her house is gone. And I can see the tornado. It's going through the cornfield. It's level the farm. The grain silos are gone. The grain bins are out in the field now, right? And like spill fuel, diesel fuel and stuff. And the tornado is leaving the house and the property, right? And the moon is illuminating the tornado. It's unbelievably gorgeous, right? There's a phone, there's a rotary dial phone on that wall right in front of me, like a foot in front of my face. And I'm like, I wonder if it still works. I grabbed the phone, dial phone, and I picked it up, and there's a dial tone because the lines were buried underground. Oh my gosh, call 911. They go, what's your emergency? I go, this is Jeff. We survived, but the house is gone. And they go, I said, what's your name? She tells me her name. And I said, I'm a route so-and-so. And they go, we got the cow, because now it's totally dark. They got the cavalry coming. Okay, so every county sheriff, fire department in that whole county is coming. It's like a smoking advantage type moment. I'm looking out and I can see 10 miles out in the distance. I see flashing lights coming from every direction you can imagine, right? They're descending on that location. So they get there. There's nothing funny about it. It's just crazy what happened. They get there and they already called the county dealership for the things of Chevrolet dealership to come and help get my vehicle. And when the guy gets there, he goes, here's a set of keys to a Suburban. They brought me a Suburban. They just brought it, right? And he didn't ask for nothing. And the guy hands me keys. And he goes, you need to go get some rest tonight. And he goes, we'll take care of your vehicle. Don't worry about that. And so me and Brian unloaded my stuff in the van. Good thing we got out of the van because one of the grain silos had imploded and like it lodged itself into the front of my van, broke out the window and impelled the van, right? Yeah, the farm equipment, right, to the southeast house because the RP wrap around. I think it was an F3, F4 on Egger. Don't remember off the top of my head, but it was a serious tornado. The funny thing is when we got to the hotel, taking a shower, I got corn, because corn in the field. I had corn stubbles coming out of my head because I'm washing. I got corn in the shower. Because all the fire debris, right? I mean, it's just crazy. So we survived. I'm glad the lady's house was there. I'm glad me and Brian was able to run and make it to the house to get down in the basement, or it would have been a more serious situation, right? So that's that story of Egger, Nebraska situation. But it was an incredible chase, and luckily we survived, and luckily Brian saw the farmhouse, and we took off and was able to make it. So that's the Egger, Nebraska story. That was pretty crazy.
That's just a small part of what made our WeatherPods Disaster Relief Telethon such a success. Thanks to all of our special guests, our co-hosts, and to you at home who helped us raise over $7,000 for the American Red Cross and their disaster relief efforts. You can still donate. The link right now in the description, wherever you're watching or listening this week. I'm James Brierton. Thanks so much for spending time with us. We'll see you again next week for more from the Carolina Weather Group. Be well.